Hello.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Traveler Seekers and Wandering Ways here on Intuitive Soul this afternoon. And our guest today is Julia Norris, President of Family Coaching Services from St. Catharines, Ontario. And really looking forward to having a nice chat with Julia. I met Julia at least 3 years ago at a holistic event. And we just have one of those hugs that pretty much blew the roof right off my skull. It was quite a powerful experience. So I'm really happy to welcome Julia here today, who had a bit of an issue. She was going to be here in the studio and was driving in and had to go back home with a problem with the car. So hopefully all that is going well now for Julia.
And we have Julia on the line, do we not?
Yes.
Good. Welcome, Julia.
Thanks.
Hey, Julia. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks.
That's good. So you made it home okay? How's the car?
Well, we'll see when the mechanic gets through. But you know, it always works out exactly the way it's supposed to be.
So oh, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, it would have been great to get to see you again, though. That would have been really nice.
Oh, it would have been a blast, because I was just telling everybody that when we met the first time and we hugged, it was such an incredible, uplifting experience. I said it pretty much blew the skull right off the top of my head. It was just one of those things. So it was really nice. So I wanted to talk to you. Maybe you can just tell us a little bit about what you actually do, what your company does.
Well, we work with the family relationship.
Are you there? Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me?
And we're just missing a little bit of Julia there. So Julia runs or is the president of Family Coaching Services. Family Coaching Services, president and founder of Family Coaching Services. And as I was saying, we met a few years ago and had a very wonderful experience in the meeting as well. Julia at that time was, she has 6 children and works with children and family services and has had an incredible experience in her life that has brought her to this point in being able to share her experience and help families work together and develop a cohesive relationship within the family, working with her own children, and Julia is going to be a grandparent for the first time this year as well. And we have this wonderful connection that Julia makes to the people around her. I know definitely for me it was quite a powerful experience to be with someone and to meet someone on an energetic level that that was really comfortable and safe. So what I see and what Julia is able to offer her client base is a safe and accepting environment. A lovely experience I had with this was that when Julia and I hugged, I remember when I did my first Reiki attunement, and Julia, I can't hear you.
I'm here.
I can't hear anything.
Really?
I can't hear a sound.
Are you there, Julia?
I'm here.
Oh, I can't hear a thing.
I can hear everything going on there.
Okay. Here I am thinking that you were dropped, and I'm going, oh no, I'm making up time. What do I do? Because I can't hear a word you're saying.
Candid Radio. No, you're doing a good job. Keep going. I love hearing all this great stuff about myself. Yeah, so our company, we focus on family relationships. And what's dearest to my heart is the parent-youth relationship, because we tend to, as a society, not value youth. And they're like the next step before becoming adults and the next, you know, leaders and stuff of tomorrow, which is all very cliche, but it's true. And so that's really where I really love working with that relationship right there. Youth in the criminal system and those that are just really struggling, those are the ones that really have my heart.
Mm-hmm. Now, Julia, you find in this process and working with these people, do you find a lot of youth have that kind of disenfranchisement, we might want to call it, or...
The majority of the youth that I encounter do feel very disconnected. They feel disconnected from their families. They feel disconnected from society. And you know, that would make perfect sense because from the time children are little, we, not intentionally, but we teach them to disconnect from themselves.
Yes.
So if you're disconnected from yourself, how can you have a hope of feeling connected to anyone?
Mm-hmm. So what has helped you in your personal life to affect a change and to have an understanding and compassion for these families and for these youths and creating those relationships?
Well, my spicy life has prepared me for this. I have walked a very interesting path myself, and in the middle of it, you know, you rail at the skies and curse anything and everything because everything's just so unfair and it's so painful. But I had the most wonderful and painful things go on that I was able to somehow magically someone would enter my life and help me get a different perspective on what was happening. And this was about, oh gosh, in 2004 was really when everything really started turning around for me because I'd been myself in a cycle since childhood, this downward spiral, and it really built momentum by my teen years and my young adult life. And it was just getting worse and worse, and I would go, oh, it can't get any worse than this, not realizing that was an invitation for it to get worse. And when I thought I'd hit rock bottom, well, that would fall, and I would hit another rock bottom. And finally, I just had to surrender and just let go and say whatever, because I've tried to steer this horse, and it's just doing its own thing, and all I could do was let go. And that was the best thing I could do, because then slowly the wheel started turning the other direction, and people started coming into my life who could then point back to all the painful stuff and go, now look, do you see how that has actually served you? What are the gifts that were in that, and how has it benefited you? Where before, all I could see was how unfair and how painful it was. But then, having this new way to look at it, this new perspective, totally changed the way I saw my life. It's almost like how like, there'd be like a tapestry on the wall, and one side you just see the strings, and it's just kind of ugly. But if you have it turned properly, it's this beautiful little picture. And that's how life can be, too. That's how my life was.
Okay.
And now I can appreciate everything that I went through, all the abusive marriages, the rape, the everything that I've encountered, injustice by various systems, everything, all played a role in preparing me for what I do today.
Right. So as part of that process, when you talk about the... kind of just falling into it, to let go, to just say, okay, this is it, surrender. That idea of surrender. How, in your experience, how can we show that to family units, to youth, to help them prepare for their lives and to accept just themselves?
Well, that's kind of a, that question has so many extensions to go. In my workshop, I like pictures, and I like acting and whatever. So instead of just talking, I like to do a lot of interactive things that are symbolic of what they're experiencing in their families. And one of my favorite analogies is I'll put a parent in a chair and me in a chair beside and have this whole, this is a very condensed version, but it's like you're in your canoe and I'm in my canoe and we're paddling down this stream. Oh, wait a second, and I start trying to climb into their chair to steer their canoe because, look, you're doing it wrong, and I know best, and you need to listen to me, and blah, blah. Well, the only thing that parent can do is to push me away. That's their only choice. And it's a very good example of what we tend to do to our youth. Mm-hmm. Look, you're about to embark on life, and you're not prepared, and here, listen to me, and you're mm-hmm. doing it wrong, and la, la, la. They have no choice but try to push you out of their canoe. So they spend all their energy trying to get you back in your canoe so they can paddle their canoe. And meanwhile, the parents' canoe is kind of going wild because nobody's steering it. But it really creates a lot of tension within the family mm-hmm. where if you just go, okay, I know that you can handle that canoe. Only one person can steer it. I'm going to steer mine, and I will demonstrate to you by living my life right. in a way that I would like you to live yours. Mm-hmm. Not that that is your intention to get them to, but mm-hmm. being in your own integrity and honoring your own path. So as you, as the parent, are walking that way or paddling your canoe, then the child can get the feel of his canoe and watch you as you maneuver through the mm-hmm. rapids and watch out for those rocks and whatever. Yeah. And yeah, there's going to be tumbles and mm-hmm. whatever. But with the parent in the role of supporting and guiding,
right.
it's a very different dynamic and very different relationship than a parent that's trying to control.
Right.
And everybody really does come from a place of wanting what's best for their kid. I haven't met a parent yet who wants to make their kid's life miserable.
Oh,
it's just
no,
kind of
no,
a byproduct of how we've been taught to parent.
Oh, exactly. Well, and we haven't. And what I liked about your website is that there was one quote where you said, we haven't been taught to parent. Nobody is really taught to be parents.
Right.
You just become parents without any kind of, there's no guides, as you say. You know, there's nothing written down to say, well, this is what you have to do. Or here are some guidelines. Here are some things that you can do. So by starting with the youth in what you're doing with these services and connecting families together is preparing, you're actually teaching these youths how to be parents.
Yes. And that's really what I want to do. I mm-hmm. would like to encourage them to, because we tend to use the model that we were given. We mm-hmm. parent like our parents did, or we go the opposite extreme.
Right.
Usually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's generally speaking, it's generally focused outside of ourselves and what society says we ought to be doing as good parents and what our parents are saying we ought to do as good parents for our own kids and whatever, where if we learned how to go within and listen to our own inner guidance and follow that mm-hmm. and be more inward focused on having our lives work, then the natural outflow of that is good modeling for the child going within and following their guidance. And when you're following your guidance, mm-hmm. you can't go wrong. Your mm-hmm. inner guidance will never steer you the wrong direction.
Once you're connected to it.
Yes. Yeah, and that's part of the stuff I hope that I do, is to mm-hmm. help them have that connection within themselves and encourage the listening to that, even when it doesn't make a lick of sense to the logical mind.
Mm-hmm.
Just that gut feeling, trusting that. And then the more you trust it, the more you can trust it, because mm-hmm. it just, it proves itself over and over.
Right. Okay, so in your experience, and I know you've gone through, you know, a lot of rough experiences, to kind of put them mildly. So when we look at things from that perspective, and we're looking at things, okay, here's a person who had all of these things going on, all of, you know, the abuse and the rape and those things that were going on in your life. How did you manage to pull yourself out of that? What did you do? Was there a turning point for you that you became, that you saw this insight and accepted those things that were happening?
You know, it's a funny thing. Yes, there was. There were two very pivotal places for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the absolute worst thing I could have ever imagined experiencing in my worst nightmare. I was in the middle of it. And I really, really thought, oh, it can't possibly get any worse than this. And somebody said, Julia, would you stop saying that? I've known you since university. And have you noticed? It gets worse and worse every year. Like, oh my gosh. And he said, so it's really bad right now, But imagine it being worse.
Mm-hmm.
Every aspect of this, imagine it, the absolute worst, even worse than it is now. And sit in that feeling place for a minute. And I did. I took every aspect of the current situation into even deeper, horrible, scary places.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, now, look at what it really is and be grateful that that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the relief I felt when I looked at what was mm-hmm. and then compared to what it really could be, instant gratitude. And I have to say, gratitude, and we hear this a lot, gratitude is the key.
Mm-hmm.
It is. That saved my life, just being able to find things to be grateful for.
Okay.
And slowly, it did turn around.
Mm-hmm.
Very slowly, linearly. But it was amazing because I needed it to take as long as it did for me to
to integrate
and
it.
Heal
yeah.
At
yeah.
A,
and to integrate
at
the
a
learning.
Rate that yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And the other part was that I can very vividly remember where, as I sat by myself in this dark room, thinking about everything that I was having to deal with, everything I was facing, and how I had no control, I felt that I was like at this, I don't want to say fork in the road, but that's probably the best thing to say, and I knew I had only two options. I could either let go
mm-hmm.
or continue pushing against and slowly die from that.
Right. Okay.
And go mad and be angry and just let bitterness totally eat me up, and it probably would have, because of what I was actually dealing with, it is quite possible that it could have led to mental health issues.
Right. Okay.
And, well, I'm silly enough, I didn't need to go down that road. So I
yes,
thought, okay, I'll just surrender because I get it. There is nothing I can do.
As I say, it's a short trip to crazy, and I've been there many times. It's interesting because a lot of what you're saying comes back to this idea of perspective, gratitude, and control. But control was only manifested when you surrendered.
Yes, what we do is the illusion of control.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you, when you let go, it's in the letting go and you stop trying to manipulate it according to your own agendas and preferred outcomes, that it really does unfold in a way that is more magical and beautiful than you could ever have imagined
mm-hmm.
trying to generate yourself.
Right, exactly. Because it's no longer a force. It becomes an internal power, something that's within. And that's incredible because you have this wonderful depth of experience that you're able to bring into your work as well. How do you find that working with your own family, with the six children that you have?
Well, I'll tell you, all six are wired very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something, because I made me laugh, something you said earlier. I don't remember quite what it was now, but I was thinking, oh, yeah, everyone is different, and each day is different. Like, I've been the parent of a seven-year-old before, but not a seven-year-old Phoenix. And that's my seven-year-old is named Phoenix, and
right.
she is
mm-hmm.
totally different. So what worked for the other five at seven, it doesn't for her. She's
mm-hmm.
totally different. So every step of this is new.
Every step.
And I've just got to work with it as I go. But what I have found, my poor guinea pig children, bless their hearts, those are the ones I practiced on, they have very different skills and tools than my later kids
mm-hmm.
have because of my own path and how I've grown and changed and healed and discovered what works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's following my inside, my
mm-hmm.
my own inner guidance,
mm-hmm.
and allowing them to be who they are instead of me trying to make them who I think they ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the biggest challenge because there's a lot of influence on how people perceive you as
mm-hmm.
a parent.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see parents looking like idiots in the grocery store as their kid is freaking out with a tantrum, and
mm-hmm.
they're looking like the idiot because they don't want people to think bad of them because the kid's having a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's looking at the parent going, oh my gosh, you're acting like this in public. And so I've had to, my goodness, my daughter Phoenix is, I can't wait to see what fashion trends she sets as an adult, because she's got some interesting things going on with her wardrobe right now. But so we'll go out in public, and there is still a part of me that goes, oh my gosh, what are people going to think?
Right, yes, yeah.
Because she's so mixed up in her outfit and her hair. She tries all these funny styles, and it's, oh man. So it's a beautiful opportunity for me to, again, check myself, check my own growth, and practice what I preach.
I find that hilarious, because I remember as in high school, picking out a sweater, and my mother said, are you sure you want to wear that? All the seams are on the outside, damn it. That's not a shirt. Yeah. So you beat to your own drum. So it's interesting, because you say you have your older children and your younger ones. Was there a moment or a time where your parenting skills changed, or you had a realization of a change, or was it just a gradual process?
It was a gradual process. It was kind of interesting, because as a single parent of my older two when they were young, I was influenced by my parents a lot, and that's a whole other can of worms, but for the most part, I was following what felt right to me until I got married and then let that bunch of people influence me. And then I started doing it the way society said it should be done and whatever. And I could see a real change in how that really damaged my children, and it damaged my relationship with them.
Right, okay.
So over the years, then I went back to just doing what felt right with the next round of kids that came, and that worked really well. They are very, they're very self-assured. They trust themselves. They're very intuitive, and we had a good relationship as well.
Right.
And then my last, I had him in groups of two, and, you know, playmates, built-in playmates. And then my last two, but by the time Phoenix was born, there was a part of me going, I finally get it. I'm so glad to have this new baby so I can do all this parenting stuff that I finally get now. I understand and I can do it right. And of course, it's all relative. There are things that get tweaked along the way. I certainly don't have all the answers. Just ask any of my kids.
Right. But now, but we might want to make a little kind of qualifier between what you're doing right and what society thinks is right. Because you're looking, what you're talking about is an allowance for children to be themselves and supporting them on that path. Whereas right in society is that control that we talked about earlier. So I find that really quite interesting to understand the difference in that dynamic between individualized parenting based on the child and that kind of group psychosis, we might want to say, within society.
Yes. Well, my older two were definitely controlled, and I can see the damage that that did and the wounds they carry and how they manage or mismanage that. They're doing the best they can, just like we all are.
Right. Yeah.
And again, my role is just to support them as they make their way through it.
Right.
And my younger ones, there's a, in my newsletter on my website, I even talk about this, where Phoenix, if I want her to be independent and think for herself and those kinds of things, then it starts now while she's little. It has to be okay to do that within the family so that when she becomes a teenager, she's had years of practice, and that's just part of her foundation, so that she isn't going to be easily swayed into doing things that are not going to be good for her.
For her, right.
So I enrolled her, we moved and enrolled her in the local school, and in a couple of weeks, she was, I don't know who was living with me, who had invaded her body, but it was not the child that I moved to town with. And in talking with her, I gave it about 5 or 6 weeks, and then it was like, okay, you've had enough transition time that you should have settled in by now. So what's going on? And we talked, and she gave her perspective of what was happening at the new school. And she was really feeling disliked and picked on and rejected, and which is, she's never had this experience in this kind of setting, because that's just not the kind of kid she is. Everybody just loves and adores her.
Right. Yeah.
I think she gets it from me.
I'd have to agree.
Anyway, so I went to the school, and I recognized that this was her perception. Right. So I asked for the teacher's perspective on what was going on, mm-hmm. and the teacher actually ended up confirming everything that Phoenix was saying and told me that, you know, she had already labeled her as defiant and a troublemaker and all this stuff, and I thought, whoa. Now, granted, she is a button pusher,
right? Yeah.
But that's one of her gifts, because people say they believe one thing, mm-hmm. but live something totally different, and she sees right through that. That is one of her gifts. Man, mm-hmm. I have to toe the line with my integrity because she can smell it a mile away when I'm outside of that.
Right.
So yes, I expect that's probably kind of what was going on, but it became very clear to me that this was not a healthy environment for her if I wanted her to continue that spark of life.
Right.
So we just very kindly withdrew and went back to her old school.
Mm-hmm.
But it was... I'm so grateful that I'm the person that I am and have had the experiences, the parenting and all that I have, because I supported her, and I knew that if she said that it wasn't life-giving for her, then it wasn't life-giving for her.
Right.
And it was going to slowly choke that spirit in her.
Well, I find it really interesting what you said about independence and being defiant, when the teacher defined her as being defiant, yet... Mm-hmm. All Phoenix is an independent child,
yes.
with thoughts of her own. So when you have somebody who's a child who has thoughts of their own, all of a sudden they get labeled as defiant. So all of a sudden you have this contraindication of what things should be.
Yes. I think that may be part of the polarity view of stuff. You're either compliant mm-hmm. or defiant. There's no allowing for, it's possible that your perspective or your way or your idea has some validity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that if we take the time to look at that that's going to go so far with relationship. Not that you have to, not that the child can run the show.
No.
But at least have the acknowledgement that, hey, you know what, that's certainly an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that could work. You know, whatever.
Right. It develops their own self-confidence when you accept them as individual people rather than labeling them as defiant.
Yes.
I find that really quite interesting in how that happens in the school system and how your experience unfolds into this wonderful kind of blossoming to allow the child and the youth to experience themselves. That's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. So how does that bring about? So we've talked about your family and how all of this happens within your family unit. How do you extend that into your practice?
Well, anyone with kids knows that kids provide endless list of stories and anecdotes. Mm-hmm. So in getting together when a family is presenting and they've got issues or concerns, challenges, whatever,
mm-hmm.
chances are I've got a story in my pocket that I can relate to and communicate, I understand where you're coming from.
Right.
And this is what I did in that situation, and this is what I found worked.
Mm-hmm.
And it may deal with my children. It may deal with other youths that I've worked with.
Right. Okay.
It kind of depends on the situation, but I always... whatever is going to work in that minute is the one that usually comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. So now, part of that work then is also your intuitive process then.
Yes, it's been a wonderful opportunity to learn to trust my intuition
mm-hmm.
and to not guess, not second guess it and question it. That's been a challenge because I was taught at a very early age to ignore that. And I think we kind of do that, and again, mm-hmm. not intentionally, but it, you know, my gosh, child, we've gone to the bathroom 3 times at the last 3 stores. You can't need to go again. Well, how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
Don't listen to your body. Listen to me because we got to get home and cook dinner. You know, it's a small example. You can't be hungry. We just ate dinner. Little things where we're taught to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go kiss Uncle Fred. I know you don't want to, but go do it. That's rude not to. Little things.
Right, yes.
And so we learn to just ignore that part.
Because, for kids, I mean, if they're given love, they will respond in kind.
Yes.
You know, if you give a hug to a child, then they're going to give you a hug. If you present to them love and acceptance, that's what they're going to give back.
Yes.
You know, and you know, I have a nephew, and it's interesting because, you know, in families you have this, you have the name. You're an uncle. You're Uncle Tim. And when he was like 4 years old, him and his sister, I said, "You can call me just Tim. Whether or not you call me uncle doesn't show me any more respect than you calling me by Tim." For me, there wasn't a difference there. Mm-hmm. So it's allowing them that opportunity and giving them the opportunity to make a decision on their own.
Yes. And there's so much power in that. I don't think that, it's certainly not convenient, but I don't think that parents recognize the value that that really is. If they get to practice making choices,
mm-hmm.
then by the time they're teenagers and not under our constant watchful eye, they've had practice with living with the results of their consequences, for mm-hmm. better or worse, and then they're more apt to make good choices. And in while they're little, acknowledging that their voice has power, or just validating them as people instead of children,
right.
if that makes
yes.
sense,
mm-hmm.
it really is these building blocks in their self-image, and the self-image is the foundation of everything else. I worked with incarcerated women,
mm-hmm.
and and the same with all the youth and street youth and all this deal. And what I have found as the common denominator is every one of these people feel on some level that they are unlovable or that they are defective in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And when you feel unlovable or defective, you're going to make choices that will reinforce that view of yourself.
Right.
So in doing these little things, letting them have choices and giving them power and, you know, picking the color of pajamas or whatever, you know, these little things build that and actually help them value themselves and love themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's while it's not convenient, the payoff makes that investment of time so worth it.
Right. So it's almost bringing, so for incarcerated women, it's almost bringing them back to childhood, basically, in order to develop that sense of confidence in making a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, it's a building block. So you're going, instead of being an adult, you're going back to a child with building blocks and building yourself back up again. Is that kind of how you think about that or approach that in some way?
In working with the women, is that what
yeah.
you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of more of what issue is presenting. Sometimes it's more of like a crisis moment of dealing with the now and what they're perceiving. I always deal with what they perceive the problem is
right,
before
okay.
And then I kind of worm my way down to what the real issue is.
Okay.
And sometimes it takes a few meetings to do that, and mm-hmm. sometimes it's pretty quick. It all depends on how stuck mm-hmm. that person is and how ready they are to move out of their perception.
Okay.
And that is so true, because I just remembered in my own situation, I had three abusive marriages, and each one of them, people around me, you know, called it what exactly it was. This is abusive. Mm-hmm. How can you stay in this? How can you let this happen? And blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But it wasn't until I came to the realization on my own, oh my gosh, I think this is abuse. It took me three marriages to figure it out. I kept marrying the same man with a different face and name, but it was all this, you know, recreating the same scenario for mm-hmm. myself. And again, it was choices I made to reflect back to me proof that I was unlovable.
Right. Okay.
So they were beautiful dance partners, because they just held up a mirror saying, look, Julia, this is what you believe about yourself. You believe it's okay to be treated this way.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to choose? You're going to choose, yeah, you're right. Or you're going to choose, no, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It's interesting, because you said, you know, you married the same man, just with different faces. And I'm wondering, were the issues always the same? Because sometimes we can have, when we've trying to get this straight out and how I can figure out how to say it. when we look at things and we have a perspective, and we're looking at abuse from, say, the originator, from a family dynamic, for example, if parents were abusive, mother was abused, then the daughters will probably find the same man. In that way, the cycle of abuse that's been created within that. I've also seen it where people react completely the opposite, go to the opposite extreme, but still end up in the same situation, still abuse, but of a different style. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Can you explain a little bit more of that in your terms?
Well, if you think about what abuse really is, mm-hmm. It's a power imbalance.
Right.
And you see power imbalance everywhere. Mm-hmm. Even, I mean, you look at the parent-child role. I mean, certainly somebody's got to be in charge, but that doesn't mean you have to disempower mm-hmm. to be in charge. I tell my kids, you know, I don't like playing the I'm the mama card, mm-hmm. but let's face it, I'm the one held accountable. I pay the rent. I'm responsible if the car gets wrecked. So I get to make these big choices. But everybody's got some input. Everybody's point has mm-hmm. value. But it's power and people acting out their wounds. That's what I think it is. Because I know that with my all of my relationships, and I'd have to say about 95% of my relationships were abusive, and that means all relationships, not just romantic ones. Mm-hmm. My employer-employee relationships, most of my working relationships, there was a huge power imbalance, and it was abuse. It might not have been physical, but it was mm-hmm. still abusive.
Right.
So for me to allow that, that obviously I had some wounds that were needing healed. I needed to change perspective on myself.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have stayed in that situation.
Right.
And the other person, it obviously had some wounds, because if you love yourself, you're going to extend that love to another person. You're not going to hurt them. You're not going to be unkind.
Right.
So I think it's really just a dance of wounded people trying to help each other heal the other one's wounds,
right.
But I don't think it's recognized as that.
Because we don't recognize it, because we have these it's almost like blinders. We don't recognize it. There's not an awareness, even though it's right there in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make
yes,
kind of sense?
I agree. I know that when I was in the middle of it, if somebody had come up to me and said, Julia, there is no such thing as a victim, I probably would have decked them, because obviously I'm not asking for this. What do you mean I'm
right.
contributing to this? But now I can see very clearly I'm contributing by saying, yes, it's okay to treat me this way. And mm-hmm. I obviously didn't verbally say that, but my staying mm-hmm. and my mannerisms and my choices
right.
certainly communicated that message. Now, now it's like totally different. I can smell it coming. It's like, oh, no, thanks. I've already played that game. I've already dealt with all that. But every so often I get that little pop quiz from the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Did you really get this dealt with, or is there some residual stuff?
Right, yes. Yeah. And it's a constant thing, because, you know, it comes from our unconscious mind. Mm-hmm. And as it comes from the unconscious to the subconscious to the conscious, it's only when it's conscious, but we can act a lot of times at an unconscious level without really understanding what's going on around us.
Yes.
In that way. And it's interesting, because you talked about the abuse cycle in your life, and it's anywhere there's actually a structure of power, whether it be in a relationship or in a work environment. So we're looking at abuse in that way. Wherever there's a structure or a hierarchy of a hierarchy of individuals. So we create a different dynamic based on that power. You know, in what you talk about in your family and in your work, is that in that structure, within that dynamic, there is an allowance and an acceptance that everybody's on the same level, in the same playing field.
Yes. I definitely try to communicate that.
Okay. And how do you help people with that realization? Right now, I want to know the answer.
it is a hard thing for some people to grasp, because we're so conditioned from every angle mm-hmm. that you know, kids, respect your parents, listen to your elders, and but just all of these rules and things that you don't question. You just do it because it's the way it's supposed to be, and I'm in charge, I'm bigger, you have to do a lot of stuff. And we're in the media, the institutions, education system, all this stuff, that's what's in place. I think that's part of the change we're seeing, like where we're going as a world, kind of moving towards that, and we're in that transition phase now. So some people are more receptive than others because, you know, old habits die hard. It's hard to make change. It can be hard to make change. It can be hard to let go of the familiar. Yes, I took three, multiple abusive relationships because that was familiar.
Right. Exactly.
And in making new choices, I got good outcomes and things that encouraged me to keep going that direction, but it was still scary because it was unfamiliar territory.
Right.
So when you think about giving up the parental power, control that you grew up hearing that you got once you became a parent because your parents were using it on you,
right,
to give up that and to validate the child as an equal of sorts. I'm sure you know what I mean.
Yes.
sure you know what I mean.
Yes, yeah.
That's kind of a scary thing because for some reason we think that if we give children any power, they're just going to run amok with it. Well, are they? Or is it that's what we're afraid we will do?
Well, or is it actually what we are doing?
There you go.
Not necessarily what we think we're doing, but what we actually do. Because if we give voice to something, usually if we're giving voice to something and saying, don't do this, it's actually something that more than likely we're doing in some way ourselves.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
You know, it's that do as I say, not as I do kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing, that's what we're talking about. And children being seen and not heard.
Right.
And the whole, and even from the time of babies, you know, don't cry, don't touch, don't do this.
Yes.
We separate them from everything that is physical and necessary to live this particular life, this particular incarnation on this particular planet or plane or wherever we want to call it right now, this place.
Yeah.
So it's really quite interesting to see how that all plays out along that way and how we have wonderful people who are out there to help open our perspectives and to broaden our ability to manifest change and to accept change because it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's what you see. You know, we were talking earlier today and all the changes that have taken place in your life.
Yes, I would not change a thing of it, not one single bit of the painful stuff. And that's a thing that people will have regrets and wish they'd done things differently and all this. And I have to say, I am so at peace with the choices that I made because I get it that I did the best I could in that circumstance. And that's something that I've in watching youth and stuff too, I had this realization that everyone does in that moment what they think is the best thing based on their perspective.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean, when a toddler grabs a toy and clocks some other kid in the head with it, based on their perspective and understanding of the situation, this was the best way to handle that. And so,
well, it's just they couldn't verbalize the question, is this hard?
So I can extend that same grace and compassion on myself, which is probably one of the hardest things you can do, self-forgiveness and self-acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been able to extend that to myself and, of course, other people as well, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I would say my kids might challenge me on that. What do you mean the dishes aren't done? But it's really, everything really is here to serve us and help us be who we intended to be when we came here. I firmly believe that. If one component of my past had been left out, I wouldn't be able to do what I do.
Right.
I wouldn't be able to relate with my clients. In dealing with pick a system, any of those systems that are out there. It is such a disempowering trip that when you are finished battling, if you want to use that word, with a system, it is so disempowering that now I can get it how so many people's lives go crappy after it. Your first encounter in the criminal system, and you do your time and you come out, however long you've been in there, you've been emotionally beaten so badly. How can you ever hope to function in society again?
Right.
I mean, some do. Don't get me wrong.
No, yes.
But
yeah.
it's such a disempowering situation that I can totally get. And I like to think of myself as being, you know, pretty tenacious, pretty strong and whatever. But I have to say, I can totally get how some could just totally give up.
Well, yeah. And once you get into the system, it stays within the system. Mm-hmm. And what I find really, you know, maybe you can help me with this. This is just my perspective. But I find that within those systems, and we'll use it generally, not to poke at anybody, but within those systems, they have rules and regulations. And yet, with those rules and regulations, you have somebody within the system who can tell you how to circumvent them. Have you encountered any of that?
Yes.
So tell me how that affects things and how that works.
Well, that's when you go back to the belief system that, you know what, everything is working out the way it's really supposed to. The universe conspires for my highest good. I tell you, I lived in an apartment a couple of years ago that had two buildings. One building burned down, and like they had to gut it and everything. And the fire licked over onto our building enough that we had to evacuate for 3 days.
Right.
Well, I left because I went, I'll go see if one of my friends will let us stay there and whatever, and happened to have a couple extra bucks so we could get clothes and food to take us through. Well, I left 5 minutes before the, the Red Cross, whoever, showed up and handed out vouchers for hotels, vouchers for food, vouchers for clothes. And it was like, oh, crumb. If I'd stayed five more minutes, but I just have to trust, you know what, that money was not for me.
Right.
It was not intended for me. It was for people who didn't have other resources. You know, or whatever. Everything just always works out. Sometimes doors are closed that you're helping everybody else. Why can't I access this help? Well, because that's not for you. Whatever reason, you have to trust that there's a better way for you than this.
So now, do you help
and
people navigate?
And that's how I've got through a lot of my stuff.
Okay, now do you help people navigate those waters as well?
If they need, that's really not, I do make referrals to different things. That's not really, I haven't done a lot of that.
Right, yeah.
But it's certainly available, and I can do that.
Just based on your experience, I was just wondering.
Yeah, I'm more... My passion really is directing people back inward. To self-healing. Of course, marketing to mainstream, I can't say it that way, but that's really the core of it is guiding people back to themselves and reconnecting with themselves.
Isn't that amazing? All this work that a lot of people are trying to do is reconnect people to themselves, and it's really hard because most people do think that they are connected. It's just maybe sometimes the wires might not be as... untangled as we would like them to be.
Well, and it's all relative too. Like my family is in the States, and I'm the only one up here in Canada. So people on the outside would go, "Oh my goodness, you're not very connected to your family." Wow, my family's here in town. We're very connected. Never mind that every time they get together, it always ends with a shouting match, and people walk away with hurt feelings and swearing they're never going to get together again. Who's really connected? I call and I talk to my parents on the phone. I get down and see them when I can. We've got a great relationship.
Yes.
You know, the distance may help with that. But we are connected.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, a lot of people in my life, it's not necessarily that we talk on a consistent basis or frequently, but when you make real connections, they're there forever. So no matter how long you haven't spoken, you still have that connection. So it's like the day is not passed, when you haven't spoken. Mm-hmm. And I have a great relationship with my parents. They're in Newfoundland, which is, you know, 3.5 hour plane ride from here, or 3 hours or something. And it's fabulous. You know, I might not get to see them, but I do talk a lot to them. And now the hard time that they gave me growing up, I'm really happy to be able to give that back. All those things that you tried to teach me. Where's your head? Use your head. Now I can give it back to them, right?
Isn't that funny how parents are? I know my mom on some level was going, oh, yeah, I can hardly wait till you have kids. And then you'll see all the trouble you caused us. But I parented very differently. Mm-hmm. So she kind of missed out on getting to, you know, gloat, because I don't try to control my kids. It's not a headache. I go, okay, well, if that's how you want to be, that's okay, but I don't have to stand around and look at it.
Yeah, exactly.
This doesn't feel good to me, so I'm not going to participate.
Yeah, exactly. It's important
that I feel good, that I feel peace.
Yeah, as I say to Dad all the time, that's okay. You can live in your own reality. Oh, that's brilliant. So what do you have coming up, Julia? Do you have any presentations or anything that you have coming up? Or?
You know what? I am working out something with a school board. I had gotten to go in and pop in and offer my services kind of on a loose basis. It was really more about relationship building, because I really like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
With this program for youth that are suspended from school, and I'm working something out with them that I just come in once a week and validate them is really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Shh, don't tell them, because I've called it something else. But it's really an opportunity to give them voice and validate them. So talk about what's important to them and
how
they see life.
Well,
and I'm working on a book that I expect to be due out later this year.
Okay. And what's the book about?
It is called Parenting as a Spiritual Path. And it's very cool watching it unfold, because it's taken on a life of its own. I know that my children have been probably some of my best spiritual teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to really point to Phoenix on that one, because that's when I became aware
mm-hmm.
that she was a teacher. Everybody else had been helping me along the way.
Right.
But Phoenix is very knowing of, I mean, she knows exactly why she came here. When she was little, she told me, she said, I've come to do very important things, and it's going to change people.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, she started it right here at the house. And, like, at 3 years old, going, Mom, you're listening to your ego right now. Maybe you need to go have time with Spirit and then come talk to me. little things like this. But she's definitely been placed in my life
mm-hmm.
to help me grow and develop spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And the book isn't about that so much as it is how I think children are a component of our spiritual path. They don't get mm-hmm. in the way of it, but
mm-hmm.
their role of parenting can actually be a path of its own.
Right. Yes.
And it's interesting how, like I said, as it's unfolding and following the different chakras and relating to parents and our role as parents and the relationship with our children and healing our own dysfunctional ways we were parented and all of this, it all slots right into each of the different chakras in different flavors, and it's just amazing. I'm astounded by what I'm seeing on the paper as I write. It's amazing. I can hardly wait till it's finished and I can read it.
Yes, exactly. Well, you have to come on again so we can talk about the finished product and what's going on there.
Great.
So that's brilliant, Julia. Well, I think, is there anything else that's going on, or how can people actually get a hold of you now?
Through my website is probably really the best way. I do have a contact link,
mm-hmm.
and my website is www.familycoachingservices.org. And there's a contact us link,
mm-hmm.
and the website shows all the different things we offer. We've got programs for parents, programs for youth,
mm-hmm.
Family relationship building events, and a lot of different things.
Awesome. Incredible.
All focused on, well, healing.
Healing, yeah. And connecting family units, bringing back family units and
yes.
creating community within family, which extends to our community itself
yes.
and around the world. So I think that's really quite wonderful and have you on and talk about all the stuff. It's a joy, an absolute joy to hear how excited you are and what's going on in your life and all of those things. So it's absolutely incredible.
Well, I'm so grateful that you had me on. This has been great fun.
Well, I know when I first met you, it was just a joy, just to be in your presence. And I remember you talking about Phoenix, and she was only, well, she must have been only two at that time, I'm sure, maybe three. So I do look forward to connecting again and hearing more about what you're doing and all of the wonderful stuff that's happening in your life and how you pass that along to people around you.
So. Well, thank you. I look forward to sharing.
Awesome. So again, we're talking to Julia Norris, president of Family Coaching Services, and you can reach them at familycoachingservices.org. O-R-G, and that's where you'll find them. So any final words that you'd like to share with us, Julia?
Final messages. The most important thing that you can do to improve family relationships is love yourself.
Okay.
That's what it really boils down to.
And it's going to improve not just your family relationships, but all the relationships around you.
Yes.
Brilliant. How nice to give that to the youth and to children and to families. And it's a wonderful gift to be able to make those changes and facilitate people making the changes in their lives. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Okay, my darling. I think that's it. We're done for today.
Okay. And you've been listening to?
This is Travelers, Seekers, and Wandering Ways on Intuitive Soul Radio.
And we'll be back next month. Any idea who our guest is?
Next month, it's probably going to be Terry Segal of Rhythmic by Nature. So we're going to have a drummer, and it's going to be in the studio
awesome.
Next month. So.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Well, this is it for Thursday, and we will be back tonight with two shows. So starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, looking forward to connecting with you then. All right.